Chapter 33. Some account of a Tad's will, of the state of parties therein, and of the election of a member, to serve in Parliament for that ancient, loyal, and patriotic borough. We will frankly acknowledge that, up to the period of our being first immersed in the voluminous papers of the Pickwick Club, we had never heard of a Tad's will. We will with equal candor admit that we have in vain searched for proof of the actual existence of such a place at the present day. Knowing the deep reliance to be placed on every note and statement of Mr. Pickwick's, and not presuming to set up our recollection against the recorded declarations of that great man, we have consulted every authority bearing upon the subject to which we could possibly refer. We have traced every name in Schedules A and B, without meeting with that of a Tad's will. We have minutely examined every corner of the pocket county maps issued for the benefit of society by our distinguished publishers, and the same result has attended our investigation. We are therefore led to believe that Mr. Pickwick, with that anxious desire to abstain from giving offense to any, and with those delicate feelings for which all who knew him well know he was so eminently remarkable, purposely substituted a fictitious designation for the real name of the place in which his observations were made. We are confirmed in this belief by a little circumstance, apparently slight and trivial in itself, but when considered in this point of view, not undeserving of notice. In Mr. Pickwick's notebook, we can just trace an entry of the fact that the places of himself and followers were booked by the Norwich coach, but this entry was afterwards lined through, as if for the purpose of concealing even the direction in which the borough is situated. We will not, therefore, hazard a guess upon the subject, but will at once proceed with this history, content with the materials which its characters have provided for us. It appears, then, that the Tansville people, like the people of many other small towns, considered themselves of the utmost and most mighty importance, and that every man in Tansville, conscious of the weight that attached to his example, felt himself bound to unite, heart and soul, with one of the two great parties that divided the town, the Blues and the Buffs. Now the Blues lost no opportunity of opposing the Buffs, and the Buffs lost no opportunity of opposing the Blues, and the consequence was that whenever the Buffs and Blues met together at public meeting, town hall, fair, or market, disputes and high words arose between them. With these dissensions, it is almost superfluous to say that everything in the Tansville was made a party question. If the Buffs proposed to new skylight the marketplace, the Blues got up public meetings and denounced the proceeding. If the Blues proposed the erection of an additional pump in the High Street, the Buffs rose as one man and stood aghast at the enormity. There were Blue shops and Buff shops, Blue inns and Buff inns. There was a Blue aisle and a Buff aisle in the very church itself. Of course, it was essentially and indispensably necessary that each of these powerful parties should have its chosen organ and representative. And, accordingly, there were two newspapers in the town, the Tansville Gazette and the Tansville Independent, the former advocating Blue principles, and the latter conducted on grounds decidedly Buff. Fine newspapers they were. Such leading articles, and such spirited attacks, our worthless contemporary, the Gazette, that disgraceful and dastardly journal, the Independent, that false and scurrilous print, the Independent, that vile and slanderous calumniator, the Gazette, apostrophes, and other spirit-stirring denunciations, were strewn plentifully over the columns of each, in every number, and excited feelings of the most intense delight and indignation in the bosoms of the townspeople. Mr. Pickwick, with his usual foresight and sagacity, had chosen a peculiarly desirable moment for his visit to the borough. Never was such a contest known. The Honorable Samuel Slumkey, of Slumkey Hall, was the Blue candidate, and Horatio Fiskin, Esquire of Fiskin Lodge, near Tansville, had been prevailed upon by his friends to stand forward on the Buff interest. The Gazette warned the electors of Tansville that the eyes, not only of England, but of the whole civilized world, were upon them, and the independent imperatively demanded to know whether the constituency of a Tanswill were the grand fellows they had always taken them for, or base and servile tools, undeserving alike of the name of Englishmen and the blessings of freedom. Never had such a commotion agitated the town before. It was late in the evening when Mr. Pickwick and his companions, assisted by Sam, dismounted from the roof of the Tanswill coach. Large blue silk flags were flying from the windows of the town arms inn, and bills were posted in every sash, intimating, in gigantic letters, that the Honorable Samuel Slumkey's committee sat there daily. A crowd of idlers were assembled in the road, looking at a horseman in the balcony, who was apparently talking himself very red in the face in Mr. Slumkey's behalf. But the force and point of whose arguments were somewhat impaired by the perpetual beating of four large drums which Mr. Fiskin's committee had stationed at the street corner. There was a busy little man beside him, though, who took off his hat at intervals, and motioned to the people to cheer, which they regularly did, most enthusiastically. And as the red-faced gentleman went on talking till he was redder in the face than ever, it seemed to answer his purpose quite as well as if anybody had heard him. The Pickwickians had no sooner dismounted than they were surrounded by a branch mob of the honest and independent, who forthwith set up three deafening cheers, which being responded to by the main body, for it's not at all necessary for a crowd to know what they are cheering about, swelled into a tremendous roar of triumph, which stopped even the red-faced man in the balcony. Hurrah! ! Shouted the mob, in conclusion. One cheer more! ! Screamed the little fugleman in the balcony, and out shouted the mob again, as if lungs were cast iron, with steel works. Slumkey forever! ! Roared the honest and independent. Slumkey forever! ! Echoed Mr. Pickwick, taking off his hat. No Fiskin! ! Roared the crowd. Certainly not! ! Shouted Mr. Pickwick. Hurrah! ! And then there was another roaring, like that of a whole menagerie, when the elephant has rung the bell for the cold meat. Who is Slumkey? ! Whispered Mr. Tubman. I don't know, replied Mr. Pickwick, in the same tone. Hush! Don't ask any questions. It's always best on these occasions to do what the mob do. But suppose there are two mobs? Suggested Mr. Snodgrass. Shout with the largest, replied Mr. Pickwick. Volumes could not have said more. They entered the house, the crowd opening right and left to let them pass, and cheering vociferously. The first object of consideration was to secure quarters for the night. Can we have beds here? Inquired Mr. Pickwick, summoning the waiter. Don't know, sir, replied the man. Afraid we're full, sir, I'll inquire, sir. Away he went for that purpose, and presently returned, to ask whether the gentlemen were blue. As neither Mr. Pickwick nor his companions took any vital interest in the cause of either candidate, the question was rather a difficult one to answer. In this dilemma Mr. Pickwick bethought himself of his new friend, Mr. Perker. Do you know a gentleman of the name of Perker? Inquired Mr. Pickwick. Certainly, sir, Honorable Mr. Samuel Slumkey's agent. He is blue, I think. Oh, yes, sir. Then we are blue, said Mr. Pickwick. But observing that the man looked rather doubtful at this accommodating announcement, he gave him his card, and desired him to present it to Mr. Perker forthwith, if he should happen to be in the house. The waiter retired, and reappearing almost immediately with a request that Mr. Pickwick would follow him, led the way to a large room on the first floor, where, seated at a long table covered with books and papers, was Mr. Perker. Ah, my dear sir, said the little man, advancing to meet him. Very happy to see you, my dear sir, very. Grace it down. So you have carried your intention into effect. You have come down here to see an election, eh? Mr. Pickwick replied in the affirmative. Spirited contest, my dear sir, said the little man. I'm delighted to hear it, said Mr. Pickwick, rubbing his hands. I like to see sturdy patriotism, on whatever side it is called forth, and so it's a spirited contest? Oh, yes, said the little man, very much so indeed. We have opened all the public houses in the place, and left our adversary nothing but the beer shop's masterly stroke of policy that, my dear sir, eh? The little man smiled complacently, and took a large pinch of snuff. And what are the probabilities, as to the result of the contest? Inquired Mr. Pickwick. Why, doubtful, my dear sir. Rather doubtful as yet, replied the little man. Fizkin's people have got 33 voters in the lock-up coach house at the White Hart. In the coach house. Said Mr. Pickwick, considerably astonished by this second stroke of policy. They keep 'em locked up there till they want 'em, resumed the little man. The effect of that is, you see, to prevent our getting at them. And even if we could, it would be of no use, for they keep them very drunk on purpose. Smart fellow Fizkin's agent, very smart fellow indeed. Mr. Pickwick stared, but said nothing. We are pretty confident, though, said Mr. Perker, sinking his voice almost to a whisper. We had a little tea party here, last night 45 women, my dear sir, and gave every one of them a green parasol when she went away. A parasol. Said Mr. Pickwick. Fact, my dear sir, fact. 45 green parasols, at 7 and 6 pence apiece. All women like finery extraordinary the effect of those parasols. Secured all their husbands, and half their brothers beats stockings, and flannel, and all that sort of thing hollow. My idea, my dear sir, entirely. Hail, rain, or sunshine, you can't walk half a dozen yards up the street, without encountering half a dozen green parasols. Here the little man indulged in a convulsion of mirth, which was only checked by the entrance of a third party. This was a tall, thin man, with a sandy-colored head inclined to baldness, and a face in which solemn importance was blended with a look of unfathomable profundity. He was dressed in a long brown surtout, with a black cloth waistcoat, and drab trousers. A double eyeglass dangled at his waistcoat, and on his head he wore a very low-crowned hat with a broad brim. The newcomer was introduced to Mr. Pickwick as Mr. Poet, the editor of the Tansville Gazette. After a few preliminary remarks, Mr. Poet turned round to Mr. Pickwick, and said with solemnity, "This contest excites great interest in the metropolis, sir?" "I believe it does," said Mr. Pickwick. "To which I have reason to know," said Poet, looking towards Mr. Perker for corroboration, "to which I have reason to know that my article of last Saturday in some degree contributed." "Not the least doubt of it," said the little man. "The press is a mighty engine, sir," said Poet. Mr. Pickwick yielded his fullest assent to the proposition. "But I trust, sir," said Poet, "that I have never abused the enormous power I wield. I trust, sir, that I have never pointed the noble instrument which is placed in my hands against the sacred bosom of private life, or the tender breast of individual reputation. I trust, sir, that I have devoted my energies to endeavors, humble they may be, humble I know they are, to instill those principles, of which are," here the editor of the Tansville Gazette, appearing to ramble, Mr. Pickwick came to his relief, and said, "Certainly." "And what, sir," said Poet, "what, sir, let me ask you as an impartial man, is the state of the public mind in London, with reference to my contest with the Independent?" apostrophe apostrophe, greatly excited, no doubt, apostrophe interposed Mr. Perker, with a look of slyness which was very likely accidental. The contest, apostrophe said poet, shall be prolonged so long as I have health and strength, and that portion of talent with which I am gifted. From that contest, sir, although it may unsettle men's minds and excite their feelings, and render them incapable for the discharge of the everyday duties of ordinary life, from that contest, sir, I will never shrink, till I have set my heel upon the Tanswill Independent. I wish the people of London, and the people of this country to know, sir, that they may rely upon me, that I will not desert them, that I am resolved to stand by them, sir, to the last. Apostrophe your conduct is most noble, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, and he grasped the hand of the magnanimous poet. You are, sir, I perceive, a man of sense and talent, apostrophe said Mr. Poet, almost breathless with the vehemence of his patriotic declaration. I am most happy, sir, to make the acquaintance of such a man. Apostrophe, and I, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, feel deeply honored by this expression of your opinion. Allow me, sir, to introduce you to my fellow travelers, the other corresponding members of the club I am proud to have founded. Apostrophe, I shall be delighted, apostrophe said Mr. Poet. Mr. Pickwick withdrew, and returning with his friends, presented them in due form to the editor of the Tanswill Gazette. Now, my dear poet, apostrophe said little Mr. Perker, the question is, what are we to do with our friends here? Apostrophe apostrophe, we can stop in this house, I suppose, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.